With increasing time and cost constraints, OBGYN generalists may be reluctant to consider adding infertility assessment and treatment to their already full plates. At the same time, there is much a generalist can offer patients before IVF becomes an option. Dr. Jani Jensen offered some efficient strategies in a clinical seminar entitled Managing Infertility Without IVF, the Old-Fashioned Way, presented at the 2014 ACOG Annual Clinical Meeting in Chicago. In this OBG management audiocast, she talks about some of the traditional barriers to generalist management of infertility, the increasing options available in the management of infertility, and how cost pressures may bring more patients to your office with a complaint of infertility. Dr. Jensen serves on the obstetrics and gynecology faculty at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Dr. Jensen, why do you think this topic is important today?
Well, for one, I think we have a lot more awareness of types of fertility treatments that are available and also of their success. And at least from our standpoint, the technology keeps getting better and better for the things that we're able to do, things that weren't possible in the past. Now we're able to build families in new ways. And I also think there's less stigma associated with fertility problems and more people are open about it, where in the past maybe there'd be a family member or someone who just never had children and people whispered about it or wondered about it, why, but there weren't really effective treatments. We didn't necessarily know the things that we were looking for, and it was something that was considered more private or maybe less talked about than it is today.
Do you think many couples jump to IVF too soon? If you do, why do you think that is?
Well, possibly. It's a complex answer. So one thing that you always have to establish with patients is kind of what is normal. And a lot of people are really surprised to learn that humans don't reproduce very efficiently. So, for example, we think that even under the best circumstances, the chance of any couple getting pregnant any given month is probably only 20 or 25%. And if you fall into the category of couples with fertility problems, you've been trying to get pregnant for 12 months or more without any luck, then your chance of success statistically any given month is not even 20 or 25%, it's 3% or less. So one early thing I'll explain to couples is that one of my jobs is to try to get you from 3% up to 20 or 25%, and that's usually very eye-opening for a lot of couples. Now, where the jumping to IVF comes into play is there are definitely some fertility practitioners that in their initial counseling will say, look, normal fertility is 20%, and if we do a fertility treatment where we give you medicines to try to make more than one egg at a time and we put sperm closer to that with an insemination procedure, the chance of success for that is about 10% per month. The chance of success for IVF is 65%. Now, what sounds good to you, a 10% chance of success or a 65% chance of success? And there are some couples, when the argument is presented to them like that, that would jump straight to IVF. But typically, I would suggest that a better approach would be to try to do the least aggressive, least expensive thing that may have a chance of working short of IVF, but only doing that for a limited amount of time, and then reserve IVF for either people who have a problem that necessitates that they go straight to IVF. Like, for example, they had their tubes tied in the past and they weren't reversed, or for couples who weren't successful using other treatments.
Do you think generalist OBGYNs are sometimes hesitant to initiate management of infertility? If so, why, and how would you reassure them?
Well, generalists are definitely asked to be experts in so many different things. In fact, if you ask me right now, management of abnormal pap smear guidelines, I'd have to go back and look it up. And subspecialty medicine, especially fertility care, I think definitely falls into that arena, that it's very difficult to keep up with the technology, especially if it's not something that you do often. And fertility patients, there's a lot of complex issues going on, not just medical issues, but also psychosocial issues. You know, patients may have sexual dysfunction. or marital discord associated with the lack of being able to get pregnant, and that is just so much for a generalist to try to deal with all of those aspects of the problem in maybe a 15-minute time slot. So what I'd really like to do is give generalists some strategies that are very efficient. You know, here's how you can evaluate a patient, and this is all you need to do in the initial visit. And then here, the next thing, these are the treatment options that are available. Here's how well they work. Here's the limit of when you should stop them. And at this point, then you can refer. And hopefully that would be very empowering to generalists.
Is anyone making the argument that cost is a reason why generalists should take on infertility more often?
Well, I think that's what we're going to see in the future. I mean, there's so many much pressure on generalists to treat more, see more, do more with less resources. And the true situation is also that most fertility treatments for a lot of patients aren't covered at all by insurance. And so with considerable personal expense on the line, you know, patients are also asking their generalists to do more with in a more cost-effective way before referring them on to more expensive treatments. And so I do expect that we're going to have more pressure also from healthcare organizations and insurance plans to have generalists do more before referring to specialty practitioners.
Is there anything else you think is important to say on the subject?
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredibly rewarding profession. I absolutely love it to be able to build families. I think is the greatest job in the world. And what I mentioned earlier is that the technology just keeps getting better and better. So we have, for example, families that carry a very serious genetic problem like Tay-Sachs disease, where the children who are affected will not survive. And to be able to have ways to help families have healthy children, I think, is a great use of the technology that we have. We always have to be cautious with how we use technology to do it in an appropriate way, but being able to build families where we couldn't in the past is incredibly rewarding, and I think it's just going to continue to be more so in the future.
Well, thank you, Dr. Jensen.
Yeah, it was great talking to you, Janelle.